This is the life worth living.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Foye Ikiator. Thank you so much for joining us on A Life Worth Living podcast, where we explore opportunities for learning as well as becoming more involved in our community as we strive to live a life that is full and has a positive impact on those around us. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Mrs. Amber Bender, who is the founder and executive director of Addie's Faith Foundation. This is an organization that I know is near and dear to her heart as she creates a legacy and creates a space that is, one, saving the lives of little children all over the world, as well as providing opportunities for funding for cancer treatments here. So, Amber, could you tell us a little bit about Addie's Faith Foundation and how you came to found this organization?
Thank you so much for having me. So, Addie was my daughter. She presented with a head tilt. She was a year old. We had just returned from a vacation and she started tilting her head to one side. And we, you know, initially thought, well, that's odd. Maybe she tweaked it on vacation. She was loving this water slide and going down that many times. And we thought maybe she hurt herself there. But, you know, what kind of started as just a, that's odd, quickly became, yeah, that's not right. Immediately, you know, took her to our pediatrician who confirmed that, yeah, you know, that's not right. Let's pass her on for further testing. We went to an orthopedic who then did an x-ray and also confirmed that they couldn't see any reason why she would be tilting her head to the side that way. And so he then sent us for an MRI. That's, of course, when we found that she had a brain tumor. And instantly, you know, our world was just flipped upside down. You know, when my daughter was diagnosed with a brain tumor at 1 year old, my husband and I learned a couple of really important things pretty quickly. And those lessons that we learned became the mission behind Addie's Faith Foundation. So one is that there's a severe lack of funding for pediatric cancer research. Less than 4% is allocated towards pediatric cancer research. So we knew we wanted to fund that research. What we also learned was that caring for a child with cancer is an extremely difficult situation. Not only is it emotionally devastating, but, you know, it can be financially as well. Right. So you're just thrown into this, you know, new world where you'll do anything to, you know, help save your child. Right. If that means you have to quit your job, that's what you're going to do. If that means you're going to have to travel across the country to get a specific type of treatment that your child needs, then that's what you're going to do. And so, you know, quite often families faced with this financial burden, they have a loss of income and an increase in expenses. And so they're in a very difficult emotional time, but also financial. And so we knew we wanted to help those families as well. Research, very important to us, but all the families that are dealing with this diagnosis right now need help right now. And so we want to help them too. So our mission is twofold, funding research and helping families. And we, you know, learned that there's just less than 4% of funding that is allocated towards pediatric cancer research. We're like, this is not okay. You know,
and when you say allocated, this is nationally, federally, like who is allocated?
Yeah. From the entire NHI, budget for less than 4% is going towards pediatrics.
So and another 6% is going towards adult?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And so a lot of the burden comes from organizations like ours. If we want to see any real significant progress, you know, funding needs to come from other sources. Mm-hmm. Pharmaceuticals, companies, you know, not to throw them under the bus or anything, but there's not a whole lot of money that's allocated from them as well. Pediatrics just adds a whole nother element to the difficulty.
And that is incredibly amazing that you've, you know, dedicated essentially your life to helping people. When did you decide to found Addie's Faith Foundation? When were you able to heal enough to be able to even look outside to see how to help other people that would be going through this type of struggle?
Yeah, it was actually pretty immediate for us. Like I said, you know, as soon as we found out about the protocol that we were going to give to her, which was extremely toxic chemotherapy, radiation, you know, all of these really extremely harmful things that we were going to do to try and save her life. It just, you know, became pretty apparent pretty quickly that this is the best we can do, you know, at this day and age with all the technology, with all the things that we have available. This is the best we can do, is treat her with these completely outdated medications that are designed for adults, you know, so toxic that you have to wear gloves to change her diapers and that don't even work, you know. So right away we knew we wanted to fund research. And then, like I said, with helping families, we had so much support from our church, from our neighbors, from our friends. We live in Houston, which has some of the best medical care in the country, you know, if not the world. My husband has a pretty flexible job, and I was a stay-at-home mom at the time. Our situation was about as good as you could get it, and it was still really, really hard. And we saw families that didn't have what we had. Mm-hmm. And so again, immediately we wanted to know, we wanted to do something there. So I credit my husband 100% for the start of the foundation, because he actually got the ball rolling. And we started the process for our 501c3 while Addie was still in treatment. Okay. So she did pass away before we got that official documentation that we were an official 501c3. But we started immediately.
Thank you so much for what you're doing. What would you say have been some of your most rewarding moments in the work that you're doing?
I have many. You know, we've been doing this for over 16 years now. And so we have been able to provide assistance to over 1,000 families. And, you know, so many of them come to us in really dire situations. You know, they're about to lose their house. Their electricity is going to be shut off. Their car repossessed, you know. So one of my favorite things to do is when a family comes to us and they present their bills and they're, you know, way behind on something. And when we catch them up and pay that off, that's probably one of my favorite things to do. It's very rewarding because I know that burden, and I know we don't alleviate all of their problems by any means, but I think most people can understand what that would feel like to be in a situation like that and then constantly have this weight on your shoulders of this overdue bill that keeps coming. And so to have that taken care of, is just a tremendous relief to the families. And so I love to be able to do that.
How do families even hear about the help that they could get? How do they even know to come to you?
So we work very closely with a lot of the hospitals. The social workers will tell families about Addie's Faith Foundation. And typically once social worker or the hospital hears about what we do, then they refer a lot of families to us all the time. And then just word of mouth from other people that we've helped. And of course, the internet being the way it is, you can find us pretty easily.
So tell me how you get funding.
We do all kinds of fundraising events throughout the year. We have a 5K walk that's coming up at Dewson Park in September. We have a holiday home tour where we put 4 homes on display that are completely decked out for Christmas and sell tickets to tour those homes. We have a golf tournament, a crawfish boil. We have a tremendous amount of events, fundraising events that we put on throughout the year. Then we have a monthly donor program. So we call it our Sunshine Circle because they're, you know, bringing rays of hope to these families. And, you know, $10 a month put together with a lot of other people allows us to do what we do. So that's really huge for us, our monthly giving program. That's what allowed us to help these families in a timely fashion, you know, instead of waiting for a fundraising event to occur where we can help them. This is an ongoing monthly process that we have to support these families. And so that's something that has just been huge. And we're trying to obviously grow that monthly giving program because we have more and more families that are coming to us every single month, and we're doing our best to keep up.
So tell me, as far as you said that only 4% of funding is allocated. What do you think can be done to increase that percentage? And why do you think the amount that is allocated to pediatric research is so little?
I wish I had a great answer for that. I think the reason it's so little is because it's a numbers game, and across the board, cancer affects children way less than it does adults, obviously. You know, so the bulk of spending goes towards adults because it's affecting so many more. So I think that's probably the main reason why. But, you know, pediatric cancer is not as rare as people might like to think. You know, it affects over 15,000 kids will be diagnosed with cancer each year in the U.S. And that, of course, that number is way bigger worldwide. So it really is an issue. And then I think that people knowing more about pediatric cancer and not really shying away from it, it's something that's obviously a very heavy topic. And sometimes people don't want to hear it, right? You know, it's too much. It's something you don't want to think about. It's probably every parent's worst nightmare. And so I think just getting word out there, spreading awareness, will really get more people involved and behind the cause. And the more people that are aware, the more people that stand behind your mission, the more funding that can be raised, and the faster we can make progress towards, you know, better treatment options for these kiddos.
Does your organization also look into helping families make sure they have things like Medicaid or any sort of government assistance due to income?
Our organization does not do that. The social workers help navigate all of that. Okay. We just pay some of whatever their most pressing bills are at the time. We also try and do our best to give them other resources with other organizations that might be doing something similar to us, but, you know, maybe housing, you know, some other need that they might have. So we will do our best to help families find other nonprofits and organizations that can help them in some other ways as well.
I mean, it sounds like you're doing definitely all you can to assist these families. The fundraising efforts that you provide, are they locally based, or are these national fundraising efforts?
Yeah, so all of our fundraising events happen here in the Houston area, primarily in the North Houston area. We do offer assistance to families from across the country, but we give priority to families here in this area because that's where the majority of our money is coming from.
What would you say are some of the biggest challenges that you face in your mission to help the families and these children?
I think a big challenge is just the way of the world today, right? There's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of competition for people's attention and certainly their time. You know, time is very limited. And so, you know, one of our challenges is just trying to stay front and center in people's minds and hearts, and, you know, helping them see the value in participating in what we have happening.
You did say that your organization is raising money so that we can try to fund research. How do you decide what institutions to invest your money in, the money that you've raised? How do you decide which organizations to invest that money in for research? Do you have favorites that you trust as far as the research that they do? Do you do research to ensure that the money that you're putting into these research institutes is going to good use?
Yes, great question. All of our funds have gone to MD Anderson so far. That's not to say that we wouldn't fund some other place in time. It's just research is extremely expensive. We've already given $2.5 million to them for a very specific research project that is working on finding a safer way to treat recurrent brain tumors. And this came about because they actually resected some tumor cells from Addie's tumor during one of her surgeries, and they were able to preserve that, and they're still doing research on those cells today. It's just been replicated millions of times in the lab, and they've been testing and working on it ever since. We have a really good relationship with the researcher there, Dr. Vidya Gopalakrishnan, who is, her and her team are doing some really great work. I love their passion, you know, for these tiny molecules and cells and stuff. They get super excited behind the microscope and trying to find a cure. And so that lab that they're doing this research in is actually dedicated and named for Addie. And so it's just really pretty special that research is happening in a lab that's named for her, with tumor cells from her, that's, you know, funded by her organization.
That actually can be very, I'm sure, very rewarding and keeps you going. I'm sure there's so many challenges that you have to face, and having these special moments to know that the work you're doing is impacting and will one day see some really good results in the lives of millions of children is touching, endearing. So tell me a little bit about running a nonprofit organization where one of your main goals is to make profit, right? So that you can have an effect. Have you ran a business before? Was this like hopping on a bike for you? You said you're a stay-at-home mom. So in my mind, I was thinking, wow, that's a huge challenge to switch to being a business owner. I mean, it's a business owner for business for a good cause, but still a business, right? You have staff. Right. Marketing.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for calling it a business, because it very much is. You know, it's kind of a misnomer that you call it a nonprofit, because we're very, very much trying to make a profit. You know, no, I have no experience or had no experience. I was a teacher before I decided to stay home with my kiddos. So I just learned everything pretty much through trial and error. Reading a ton, asking a bunch of questions, and just following in the footsteps of other, you know, nonprofits and organizations. I still look to all kinds of organizations, whether they're pediatric cancer organizations or not, just how to survive and what best practices are and all of those things. So it's just been it's been 16 years of learning and trying and failing and trying again and perseverance. And I will say, when there's passion, just make it happen.
And how would you say the foundation has evolved since inception?
Oh, a lot. We have grown tremendously. We started, you know, with zero employees, and it took us 6 years to get our first. Now we have a staff of five. You know, we've grown from doing one event to to doing multiple events. We have gone from helping one family, you know, at a time in like the first year, we gave out like, I think it was $10,000 that first year. Now we're giving out over $20,000 a month to families. And so, we have really grown, and sadly it's not enough. I mean, we're still trying to grow and still trying to help more and more.
So tell me, what would you say? I mean, just from your experience with talking to so many families, I'm sure they tell you their process of getting the diagnosis. And usually, you know, many cancers are not always a straightforward diagnosis. You know, not every headache is a malignancy. Not every tummy ache is stomach cancer. Is there any sort of recurrent theme that you see in these pediatric cancers? And is there any advice you could give any mom or dad who's listening as to when to, you know, push for more tests or do the follow-up tests, you know, go see the specialist and things like that?
Yeah, it's really, really tricky because we are talking about kids here. And so it is hard to pinpoint any kind of, you know, specific symptom or anything like that. I guess my biggest advice would be that you just need to trust your gut. And you need to push for it, right? So we were pretty lucky with Addie's situation in that from our first initial, like, that's odd, to diagnosis was about 2 weeks, which isn't really normally the case quite often. Now, that's not to say she didn't have it prior to that, that she just wasn't showing any signs. So it's just, I would say for parents to trust their gut and really push for further testing when they really know that something is off with their child.
How can listeners get involved or support the foundation's cause?
So I love to tell people to please just follow us on social media and visit our website, take a peek, you know, you can see all the different things that we have going on. Sign up for our email newsletter, and that way you can follow along with what we have. Now, not every event that we have is for you. Not everybody's a golfer, not everybody's a runner, but, you know, there is something for everybody, a way to participate. And so whether you come to a fundraising event as a participant or you want to help by volunteering, I think the best way is to just stay connected to us so you know what's happening throughout the year and you can plug in when and where you can.
You said your church was very supportive when during Addie's illness. How has the faith community been a part of the organization? And do you partner with other churches with Addie's Faith Foundation?
I would love to partner with more churches. I do partner with the church that I attend. They've always been very supportive of us, you know, financially as well as with volunteers and, you know, participants. I would love to get other churches more active in what we do. But it's been really awesome to see the goodness in so many people. That is another benefit of what I do. Another rewarding factor is I get to see just kindness at, you know, at its best. So many people that are so generous with their time and generous with their money. And it's a really special thing that I get to be a part of.
I know you said there's a lot of noise, and I guess people are also very busy, and there's so many causes out here. You know, I talked to a friend of mine who her passion was helping kids from disadvantaged communities get into college, you know, and then, you know, your passion, which is near and dear to your heart. And then there's, you know, there's just so many organizations out there, and everyone is, you know, trying to put their cause at the forefront. How do you, in a sense, compete with so many interests that are, you know, available for people to divest their time, energy, funds into?
There's so many different people out there in the world, right? And different causes resonate differently with different people. And so my cause is really not that difficult to quote unquote sell. You know, I mean, I have never met anyone who has not had empathy for a child with cancer. And so in that regard, it's a little bit easier for me because people hear what we do and almost instantly want to do something or be a part of it in some way.
So what advice would you give to others who are looking to start or get involved in a nonprofit or a charitable organization?
Yeah, for somebody who is looking to start an organization, obviously they have a passion for solving some issue in the world. And that's the first step, right? Is just having a deep desire to see a change somewhere. And then you just put all that, you know, passion and desire into learning, whether it's podcasts, books, talking to other people who are in a similar space, and just trying, right? Like, you got to just take that first step. You can think about it, talk about it, want it for a long time, but I'd say action is just the number one thing that you got to do. One step forward and get started, and it'll kind of fall into place. It's not going to be perfect, of course. You'll learn a lot along the way, but you know, one step at a time, you'll get there.
Yeah. So tell me a few lessons you've learned from your experience with Addie's Faith Foundation that you could share.
No, you have to not be afraid to fail. Right. So, you know, there are often so many more questions than answers, and that can kind of paralyze you at times, but just trying it, taking that action, taking a step, and then learning from it and adjusting and moving on.
All right. Do you all have any upcoming projects or initiatives this fall that that listeners could partner with you, participate in, sign up for?
Yes, we have our 16th annual Walk by Faith 5K at Dewson Park. That is at the end of September. And all this information you can find on our website. But that is actually a free event this year. We are focusing on fundraising. So everyone who registers for that 5K will automatically get a fundraising page that they can choose to use or not. But we hope they will. And you'll earn your shirt when you raise $100. So that's in September, which is actually Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month. So we are partnering with Humble ISD and doing a whole Gold Fight Win campaign we've done that for several years now, along with two other organizations that are local here to the area. And that gets the schools involved in pediatric cancer, learning more about that. We designate some high school games to be the Go Gold game and have some honorees that get to go out there and do the coin toss. So that's all happening in September.
Busy month then.
It is. It's a busy month for pediatric cancer.
So tell me, what do you envision for the foundation in the next 5 years?
I envision us doing a lot of the same thing, only on a much grander scale. Like I said, once a social worker or hospital finds out about what we do, they start referring all of their cancer patients to us. And so over time, we just continue to get more and more people that are coming to us for help. And so we're just doing everything we can to keep up with those demands. And so we plan on, you know, cancer, unfortunately, is not going away in the next 5 years. I mean, I would love that if it would, but that's probably not the reality. So I see us just continuing on, you know, funding that research and helping those families, only, like I said, hopefully on a much larger scale, because we'll be raising even more money than we are today.
I did want to ask about the family. You have two children, two, three kids. I saw a picture of the family on the website.
Yeah. So at the time, I had two boys and Addie. So I had three kids under the age of five at the time. After Addie passed, we adopted a little girl. So I do have four children in total. Yeah. Two older boys than Addie, who would have graduated high school last year. And then I have a 14-year-old daughter as well.
And are they involved in the organization? Do they get to celebrate the wins with you when you guys have, you know, some special moments?
Yes, very much. They've been a part of it all along. Yes. All the events, you know, it's a part of their daily life.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's a way to honor her as well, as you involve the whole family in the work that you do.
Yeah.
I'm so inspired. Thank you so much for joining.
Well, thank you.
I wish you even more success, and I pray that all the work you're doing would continue to be a blessing in the lives of the families that need it. We'll be sharing the website, the social media platforms on our page, as well as everywhere that the podcast episode will be streamed, so that listeners can click on it and get more information about participating and donating to the cause. So thank you.
Great.
For joining us today. Any last words you could share with us?
Thank you. No, I appreciate it so much. Like I said, it's just anytime I get the opportunity to share Addie's story and share her and her legacy with other people, it just means a lot, not only to our cause and to the mission, but it means a lot to me personally as well. So I thank you for allowing me to do this, and I thank everybody who's listening, and I thank those people even more for checking out our website, those of you who take the next step and learn more,
donate. Thank you so much for joining.
Well, thank you.
I really wish you all the success, and we'll put it in our calendar and hopefully be able to participate or join in on the events to come.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Tired of waiting at the ER? Lifesavers 24-hour emergency room is your number one ER for pediatric and adult medical care. Staffed by board-certified physicians with absolutely no wait time. Lifesavers 24-hour emergency room is equipped to handle life-threatening conditions quickly. Your emergency or concern is our priority, and we are here when you need us. From allergic reactions to concussions, migraines, slips and falls, car accidents, heat stroke, broken bones and sprains, sinus and ear pain, asthma attacks, and more. We have state-of-the-art equipment and technology with an on-site CT scanner and x-ray machines, as well as a full-service lab for immediate results and 24-hour pharmacy services. Our dedicated Kids Corner keeps your little ones occupied while you are attended to. The pediatric room is specifically tailored to soothe your child and ease the stress of their medical condition. Worried about COVID-19? Lifesavers ER is Houston's go-to destination for rapid COVID-19 testing, treatment, and care. Our board-certified ER physicians and ER nurses will quickly get you the urgent care you need. Lifesavers 24-hour emergency room is your ER for immediate care. Now with three convenient Houston locations, open 24/7 to get you feeling better fast. Our Willowbrook area location is located at the intersection of Highway 249 and 1960. Our Heights area location is in the Garden Oaks Shopping Center at 3820 North Shepherd Drive. Our Summerwood area location is located off the Sam Houston Tollway at Westlake Houston Parkway.